Genesis chapter 22, and we're going to read verses 1 to 19. Genesis 22. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain that I will show you." Early the next morning, Abraham got up, loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he'd cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then we will come back to you." Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac. And he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, "Father." "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and wood are here," Isaac said, "but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went on together. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." Abraham looked up, and there in a thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." The angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time and said, "I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed, because you have obeyed me." Then Abraham returned to his servants, and they set off together for Beersheba. And Abraham stayed in Beersheba. This is one of the most dramatic accounts in the Bible. It is loved of artists. I'm sure, like me, you will have seen many paintings of that moment with Abraham's arm outstretched, knife in his hand, that moment he's about to slay his son Isaac. It's beautifully written. You know, if you're studying creative writing, well, this is the perfect story. Even though you may have read it 100 times, it still is powerful when you read it. But more than the pathos and the beauty of this story, it is rich in meaning. This story, so much is written about it. And so I don't want to spend just one Sunday looking at it. We're going to have 2 sermons on it. Today we're going to look at how Abraham's faith is tested. And then, God willing, next week we're going to look more and see how this speaks to us of Christ and Christ's sacrifice for us. And both those aspects are drawn upon in the New Testament as they look back to this incident. So today we're focusing on Abraham and how his faith was tested. And I want to make two simple points and then some more application at the end. And my first point is this: your faith will be tested. Simple point, but an extremely important point for us to grasp. Your faith will be tested. You see, right at the beginning of this account, we are told that God was testing Abraham. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. Now, we are told that, and it prepares us, as we read this story, for this staggering thing that God tells Abraham to do, to sacrifice his son. We know as we start reading this that it's a test. We're not quite sure what's going to happen if we haven't read it before, but still, we know that this is a test. But remember, Abraham did not know that. God didn't say, "Abraham, I'm going to test your faith. Now go and sacrifice your son." No, no. He just says, "Abraham." Abraham replies, "Here I am." And then God says, "Take your son, your only son." It's a little bit like the book of Job. If you've read the book of Job, you will know that Job was a prosperous man with children, who 10 children, and he had lots of wealth, and he was an upright, godly man. And then suddenly, on one day, everything is taken away from him. Job does not know why. The rest of the book is Job protesting his innocence and asking God, why has this happened? But the reader is told at the beginning. And it's a little bit like that here. Abraham does not know why. Abraham does not know he's being tested, but we know. And so as we read through this account, we're to see that Abraham is being tested. That's how we're to look at this story. You see, from Abraham's point of view, everything was going along just fine. He'd known God speaking to him several times through his life, and here God speaks to him again. As far as Abraham was concerned, life was great. He had his son Isaac. Isaac was growing up. He's probably a teenager by now, and he's enjoying his old age. At last, he has a son, he has an heir, and, well, you know, he'd kind of done his bit. He trusted God 25, 35, 40 years ago, however many years it was now. He trusted God in leaving Ur of the Chaldeans. Bit of an adventure. Okay, he was a bit old then, 75, but he was fit and capable, and, you know, he'd obeyed God at that point. He'd obeyed God and trusted God when he'd rescued Lot from those kings who came and captured Sodom. Sometimes Abraham had got things wrong, but even though his faith had wavered at points, in the end he still believed and trusted that God would give him that son, and here he is with Isaac, his heir. So everything's going fine. If you like, he's enjoying his retirement. And then God speaks to him. And God speaks to him in an unmistakable way. Do you notice in verse 2 that the repetition that God uses, God explains most clearly what he is to do. God's very clear about who he's talking about. Take your son, your only son, the one you love, the one called Isaac. There's no doubt that God is speaking of Isaac here. And then God's clear about the place that he's to go. Go to the region of Moriah. Go to this mountain, and I'm going to show it to you. And then God is clear about what he needs to do. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering. Twice, sacrifice. He's to be a burnt offering. This repetition. It's unmistakable what God is saying to him. and it's far more testing than anything he has been through before. The son that God had promised him all those years ago when he was 75, that son Abraham was now going to have to sacrifice. The one that Abraham had waited for 25 years, he'd waited for Isaac. And now God says, sacrifice him. Now, human sacrifice is bad enough. But your own son, the one you love, your only son, frankly, it is shocking. Now, later, the people of Israel were told that the firstborn son would belong to God. They had to give their firstborn sons to God. Exodus 22, verse 29. But it was also explained in Exodus 34, 19 to 20, that they were to redeem their sons. They would give money. And in fact, the Levite tribe, they were the ones who were set apart to serve God in exchange for the firstborn. So they were not to be sacrificed. And yet here, God tells Abraham to offer up Isaac, the one who is his heir, the one through whom God had said your descendants would be born. Now, it had been tough enough for Abraham to send away his son Ishmael. Remember when Ishmael was mocking the young boy Isaac? And Sarah wants that Hagar and Ishmael should be sent away, and God says to Abraham, yes, you must do that. That was tough for him. We looked at that a few weeks ago. Abraham obeyed. But this is far more tough, to kill his own son. And even though we know it's a test, and even though we know what happens, it is still pretty alarming. God tests Abraham. You could hardly imagine a more difficult test than this. Now, you might be looking forward to a time when you no longer have to take exams. Those of you who are at school or students, you know, the time will come when you don't need to take any more exams. You may be looking forward to a time when you don't have to do any more job interviews, or when you don't have to move again. You may be looking forward to retirement. But you know, there's one area where we are never to retire in this life, and that is in the fight of faith. Spiritually, we are never to retire. How can I say that? Well, God has begun a good work in us as Christians. And Philippians 1 and verse 6 tells us that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Jesus Christ. In other words, God is going to keep working in you all of your days. He will carry on that work in you. And so it is no surprise, it is no disaster, when our faith is tested, and tested severely. Turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. So let me ask you, what challenges has God given to you in your life? Maybe challenges with your health, with your studies, with your job, with the situation that you find yourself in, with the people, relationships that you have. Whether it's in your busyness and the stress of that, or in your boredom and the struggle of that, God brings challenges into our lives. And let me say this, they are tailor-made for you. How can I say that? Because we are told in Romans 8 and verse 28 that in all things God is working for the good of those who love him. From the small things like the annoying queue that you have to wait in, through to the massive challenges that shake you to your core, every trial that we go through, every difficulty that we face, is tailor-made. God is testing us. God wants us to grow in maturity, to come to that point where we are becoming more like his son, Jesus. And you know, sometimes those tests can be more challenging as the years go by. I can remember when I was at school and we had to do something called the bleep test. I think some of you have heard about the bleep test. Oh, it's very easy when you start. You have to run from one end of the gym to the other and back, and you've got quite a long time to do that. You could practically walk the first time. But then the bleep goes a bit, the interval gets a bit shorter, so you have to go a bit faster, and faster, and faster, and faster. And the PE teacher is there clocking your time, writing it down. And it's tough. And it can be a little bit like that with the tests that God gives to us. At first, they're not too difficult. We feel we can manage, but they get more and more difficult. And this was the biggest test that Abraham had ever faced. It's not the last test he will face. But God tested Abraham, and God said to him, "Sacrifice your son." Yeah. Now, I have no doubt that we probably would prefer a quiet life where we are never troubled, where we are never stressed, where we are never exhausted. Like that, wouldn't we? That would be great, where we could enjoy our work, we could get on with it, and you know, no one breathing down our neck, and that would be fantastic. But life is not like that. Work does not always go smoothly. Extra things crop up. We care about people. And so we don't ignore them in their needs. And we believe that God allows each challenge that we face. That God is working all things for our good. Right through to our old age. However old you are today, do not think that you can retire spiritually. Because God tests Abraham when he is well over 100 years of age. He tests us because he wants you to grow to maturity and your faith in him. So that's our first point. Your faith will be tested. And then the second point I want to make. The test is all about obedience. Simple point, but a really important one. Would you like some water, Joan? Do you mind getting a bit of water for Joe? Thank you. The test is all about obedience. Now, there'll be many a command that we are quite happy to obey. We can see the wisdom of that command. Well, it fits with what we're doing. Or, well, it looks good to other people if we obey. But this command that God gives to Abraham, it doesn't look good. Killing your son. It certainly doesn't fit with Abraham's plans. Well, he was going to have his descendants through this son. And frankly, it seems not just foolish, but wrong. At least when Abraham had left Ur of the Chaldeans, he was a lot younger. And God had made those wonderful promises. He was to go out. He would become a great nation, he'd be given a land, he'd be a great blessing, God's going to bless him. You know, there was something of an excitement about that. To onlookers, at least to some, they might have thought, wow, that seems quite an exciting adventure. They might have thought he was a bit crazy to leave his homeland and everything, but, you know, people do crazy things, don't they? And you think, well, yeah, okay. But not this. to kill your own son. There's nothing exciting about that. Doesn't fit. Doesn't look good. What's Sarah going to say? I mean, you know, sometimes we husbands do things, you know, well, I hope she doesn't notice, or, well, what's Sarah going to say? You know what? I mean, it's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, are all his servants going to turn against him? And I think that there's a hint of how troubled Abraham is in his mind when we see what he does in verse 3, because he's quite muddled up here. Notice what happened. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. And then it says, when he cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. Surely you chop the wood first before you load up the donkey and get your son and the servants ready to go. But he seems a bit muddled here. And of course, there's so much going round his mind. I can imagine him there chopping that wood. And if you ever chop firewood, it does give you a bit of time to think, you know, between blows. And what's going through his mind? Should he tell anyone? What's he going to say to Isaac? Why is God telling him to do this? Well, whatever the turmoil of his mind, Abraham knows what he has to do. And this is the thing I love about Abraham. He's the sort of person who takes the next step. He knows what he needs to do. He takes these practical steps. Okay, they're a little bit muddled. He should have started by chopping the wood, but he takes these practical steps. Early the next morning, he gets up, he loads his donkey, gets two servants and his son Isaac, and he cuts the wood. The next step is for him to go in the direction that God has shown him. And so he sets out, step at a time, and he keeps going. You know, at a practical level, what Abraham had to do that morning was pretty straightforward. He must have done this sort of thing many, many times. You know, God wasn't asking him to, I don't know, run a 10-second, 100-meter race. You know, he could chop wood, he could saddle his donkey, he could do all these things. And, you know, obedience is often like that. In and of itself, it's not a difficult thing to do, to show kindness to that person, to return what's been stolen, or simply not to do something that God tells you not to do. But of course, the closer you get to doing the thing that God wants you to do, the harder you feel it to be. And I can imagine by the third day, that is the really difficult day. Verse 4. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. That's the place where he's got to kill his son. You can almost hear Abraham's voice cracking as he instructs the two servants in verse 5. Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then we will come back to you. You can feel the tension rising as Abraham prepares for this final stage of the journey. Verse 6. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac. And he himself carried the fire and the knife. How Abraham's heart must have ached when Isaac breaks the silence and asks, Father? Abraham says, yes, my son. The fire and the wood are here, Isaac said. But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? What's his father to say to that? I think we can see faith in Abraham's words here. And actually his words show to us something of what he's thinking in his heart. He says to the servants, "We will worship and we will come back." He says to his son, "God will provide the lamb for the burnt offering." Now it's difficult to say exactly what Abraham may have anticipated would happen. But Abraham knows two things that God has said. Firstly, God has said, "Offer up Isaac." But also, God has said that Isaac would have descendants. Back in chapter 19, verse 17. I've got the wrong reference there. But God had said that through Isaac, your descendants would come. So with these two things, the command to offer up Isaac and the promise that Isaac would have descendants, somehow Abraham reasons. He believes that if need be, God could even raise Isaac from the dead. And that's what we're told in Hebrews. Martin read for us from Hebrews 11, 17 to 19. Read those verses again. Hebrews 11. "By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Even though God had said to him, 'It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned,' Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead. And so, in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead." There is faith in Abraham's words. It was in faith that Abraham built the altar when he reached that place on the mountain that God told him about. In faith, he placed the wood on the top of the altar. In faith, he bound his son Isaac and put him on top of that wood on the altar. And in faith, he raised his arm with the knife in his hand to slay his son. Only then did the angel of the Lord call to Abraham to stop. "Abraham, Abraham, now I know that you fear God." Abraham had obeyed. That was the test. Obedience showed just how much he trusted God. The test is all about obedience. Now, we're saved by faith alone. We've been thinking about that in recent weeks. We're not saved by our obedience. Our performance, how well we do, is not what gives us God's salvation. We're saved by faith in Jesus Christ. If you want to be saved, you have to put your faith in Jesus Christ. But the genuineness of your faith is then shown by your obedience. James argues this very powerfully. Turn to James chapter 2 and verse 20. James says, "Do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? Was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did." You see, faith that is not shown in action is no faith at all. Abraham showed that he trusted God even to raise his son from the dead by obeying God, being willing to sacrifice his own son. Oh, we're justified by faith. We're justified the moment we believe. But we're sanctified as we obey. And that's a progressive thing. God does his work in us, Philippians 1:6 that we looked at before. But we are called to obey. Philippians 2, verse 12. So Philippians, it tells us it is God who is doing his work in us. Also, Paul writes, Philippians 2, 12, therefore, my dear friends, as you have obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. God is at work in us, but we have to work out our salvation. We have to obey. Faith shows itself in obedience. The tests of faith that God gives you, the challenges that he places in your life, what he asks of you is to obey. So let's make 3 points of application. We've seen, firstly, that God will test your faith. We've seen, secondly, that the test is all about obedience. Are you going to obey what God says? So let's look at 3 things by way of application. Firstly, a challenge. A challenge. Do you want to know if you have faith? This is so important. Because without faith, you cannot be saved. Do you want to know if you really are saved, that God has forgiven you, that God has granted you eternal life, so that beyond this life, you'll be with him in glory? Well, you show your faith by your obedience. You obey God, not just when it suits you, not simply when you can see it's wise or worthwhile. You obey not simply when others will notice it and so it looks good. But let me ask you, do you obey God's commands when it is not what you want to do? And when no one is looking and no one will ever find out? Do you still obey God then? In the thoughts you have, in the things that you do. And when you obey God, do you obey him because you respect God? Or is it simply in the hope of getting something from him? The angel of the Lord says to Abraham, "Now I know that you fear God," verse 12, "because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." Look at your life. When God tests your faith, do you obey? Perhaps ask yourself, well, when have I obeyed God? Particularly when I felt that it's not been a worthwhile thing to do and nobody else knows about it. When have you obeyed? When have you showed through your obedience that you really trust God? That's the challenge. Second thing, some practical help that we can see from Abraham, the father of the faithful. Here's some practical help to help us obey. You see, the day may well come when you will face a crisis of faith. Okay, things may be going fairly smoothly for you right now, and I'm glad if it is. hoping that you'll suddenly hit this awful crisis. But the day may come when you hit some terrible crisis. When you really start to doubt God. When you start to doubt whether he is good to you. Well, you need to prepare for that day of evil now. A little bit like, a country has to prepare. It has to have its defenses ready. There's no point, Theresa May say, okay, right, we're going to no longer put any money towards the armed forces, we're going to put it all into the NHS. Well, just because we're not at war at the moment doesn't mean we ignore our defences. And as Christians, we have to build our defences ready for that day of evil. How do we do so? What did Abraham do? Abraham held on to the promises that God had made. God had promised that through Isaac he would have descendants. And that's how Abraham was able to reason that God, if need be, would even raise Isaac from the dead. But it was because Isaac held on to God's promises. That's how you prepare. Hold on to God's promises. Know what God has promised to you as his child. Hold on to those promises. And think long term. When that day of evil comes, be prepared and see it for what it is. It's a test. God is not being cruel to you. I can't emphasize that more. God never is cruel to anyone. God longs for people to be saved. God longs for each one of you to trust him. And he allows us to go through these difficulties, not because he likes to see us squirming or doubting or troubled, but because he's doing his good work in us. So prepare. Another practical thing to help you obey is to obey straight away. Early the next morning, Abraham got up. He didn't delay. You know, if you delay, it only gets more difficult. You know, what if Abraham said, well, I'm going to think about this for a week or two? Do you think he would have gone and done it then? Well, we don't know, but it would have been much harder. Much harder. You see, there are times when God speaks to us and we know that it's God who has spoken. And our hearts are stirred up by what God has said. And we feel that we should do it. That is the moment to obey. Because if you wait, that sense of God having told you to do something, and the importance of that, that sense may begin to wane. And you start to see other things that seem much more plausible. If Abraham waits here, it's going to be much harder for him to obey. And so he took the first steps. I don't know about you, but there are sometimes things that I need to do that I don't want to do. But I know that when I take the first step, and then the next step, then I end up doing what I'm supposed to do. And that's a very practical thing. He takes these first steps. We have this dramatic account of him just setting off with his donkeys. I mean, of course we know what's going on here. Obey immediately. Take those first steps. Say in your heart, God, I will obey you. And then don't delay. Don't debate. If you know God has told you to do something, don't debate. Take the first step. You know, there are lots of people who know that God has spoken to them. They know that God has called them to turn from their sins and to believe in Jesus Christ. And they know that there are times when God has spoken so powerfully to their heart. And what have they done? They've turned away and done nothing about it. And that sense of God's voice in their heart has waned away. And they may never have that again. You know, if God speaks to you, if you're not a Christian here this morning, God speaks to you. Do what he tells you to do straight away. God tells you to turn from your sin. God tells you to believe in Jesus Christ. And you know in your heart that he is speaking to you. Take that first step. Say, God, I will trust you. I will turn from my sin. I will ask for your forgiveness. I will go and get baptized. That first step, speaking to me or Martin or Paul, and saying, I need to get baptized. Take that step. Because if you delay, that sense of urgency, of importance, will wane away and you may never obey God. The challenge, practical help. Thirdly and lastly, the encouragement. And the encouragement is this. When you obey God, when you do well in those tests, you will reap a rich reward. Look at what happens here. Verse 15, the angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time. I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand in the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. Obedience is blessed by God. Are you struggling to obey God today? Has God sent you a trial greater than you have ever experienced? It's because God is treating you as his child. And just as a parent disciplines their child, the book of Hebrews tells us, so God disciplines those he loves. I remind you, Hebrews 12, verse 11. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who've been trained by it. God sends that test. God sends that trouble, that difficulty, that trial, because he wants you to grow. He wants a harvest of righteousness and peace in your life. Let me close with another promise that Jesus made. John 14 and verse 23. And notice again the emphasis on obedience. John 14, 23, Jesus replied, anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. My Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. That nearness of God himself, that's the reward. You want God to be with you? You want to sense his presence in your life? Obey him. Anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. We obey out of love. And then we're told, my Father will love you, and we will come to you and make our home with you. Let us pray.